Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to episode 107 of Concussion Dog Podcast. I'm Nick Mercer. And today my guest is Lenore Herget, who is a digital DVD, PD DVD, and just knows a lot about concussions. And to say expertise there is an understatement. But we'll get more into what she's saying. First, I want to just remind everybody that they can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Concussion Doc. To please support me on Patreon.com. So Patreon.com/Concussion Doc. And subscribe, rate, and view this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And before I talk to Lenore, I'll introduce my sponsor, Head Check Health.
Concussion Talk Podcast is presented by Head Check Health. Head Check Health bridges the gaps in concussion care through simple, powerful technology. Join organizations like the Canadian Football League, Trek Factory Racing, the Canadian Junior Hockey League, Eastern Washington University, and Volleyball Canada, who rely on Head Check Health to improve communication and optimize care. Visit headcheckhealth.com for more.
Okay, Lenore, thank you so much for agreeing to be part of this podcast. And so as I kind of stumbled through your expertise here, but I'm trying to read off your Mass General is where you work. Is that where you're at now? You're at Massachusetts General Hospital?
Exactly. Mass General Sports Medicine Department.
Right. Okay. And there's a long thing that your bio here on the page, and it's extensive. So I guess your choice is what you'd like to who'll know about you is so you're a senior physical therapist, and you obviously do almost specifically concussions or also orthopedic stuff. So yeah. So what's your...
Yeah. I do a little bit of both. So probably 60% of my caseload is sport-related concussions, and then the rest is other sport-related musculoskeletal orthopedic injuries.
Wow. So you're a busy person. You will be, I'm not sure when in spring, I guess it is, it'll be early spring or late winter when you teach course for Jess Schwartz, who's on episode 103 of this podcast. She's doing Concussion Corner Academy, and one of her courses is physical therapy examination, which Lenore will be instructing. So could you just, I guess first start off talking about that. What are you going to teach in that in general?
So the Concussion Corner Academy, I believe will be getting off the ground in January. And I think I'm the third lecture. So sometime late January, mine will be going live. So my role with Concussion Corner Academy is to teach the functional exam for concussion. I'll be focusing on the ocular motor, so the functional vision exam, the vestibular exam, the cervical spine exam, and then exercise testing considerations. So kind of all of the exam and clinical assessment with concussion will be my role.
Oh, well, so you still have you teach for 2 weeks, instruct for 2 weeks?
Yes.
Okay. And so what is the role of, what would you first say with your evaluates just in general and not to get the course away here, but circogenic testing, how would you proceed with that? How would you proceed with that? What's your in general, just for a layman's audience?
Yeah, sure. It's a good question because a lot of times we kind of forget how much the neck is involved with the head and how you can sustain a concussion without even hitting your head just by the sheer force of your neck and head in a whiplash type mechanism. So because of that, a lot of the symptoms and what these people feel are very similar to the symptoms of a concussion, where they might have headache and dizziness and fogginess, but that could actually be coming from the neck.
Whiplash, pulling it off the neck.
Exactly. Just like a whiplash induced injury. And so it's often concomitant with the concussion. So you're getting a neck injury with your head injury. So the cervicogenic part of the exam is to try to tease out is the neck contributing to what they're feeling, or is it just the head? So there are a few different. Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, So
obviously, you would do your regular musculoskeletal workup, looking at ligament stability, range of motion, joint mobility, muscle palpations, strength testing. But what separates this from a regular orthopedic or musculoskeletal exam for the neck is getting into the sensory integration and proprioception testing. So there are a few good tests out there that have good sensitivity and specificity. So the ones that I use mainly and that I'll be teaching, one of them is the smooth pursuit neck torsion test. So it looks just like your regular smooth pursuit test, like an H test or an I test that you would be doing to look at eye movements.
Yeah,
it's exactly like that, except you have the patient rotate their head 45 degrees to one direction, and you repeat the test, and 45 degrees the other direction.
Like instead of your eyes following a pen or whatever, your whole head does. Is that the idea?
It's still just your eyes. Okay. So it's straight across from your patient and having their head and neck in primary position, just looking straight ahead. Now they're rotating, so you're going to be at an angle. You're still going to just watch their eyes move, but there's some torsion now through the neck. The neck is rotated. Otherwise, you do the exact same H test for smooth pursuit. And so what you look, does it feel different for the patient? Sometimes it causes more eye strain. And do you notice any breakdown of eye movements? So if it was smooth when you were sitting straight across from them, but now it's all saccadic and kind of choppy, that indicates that there may be some more contribution coming from the neck, or if it hurts them more or causes more of a headache when they do this, the H test or the smooth pursuit test, if it hurts more or causes more symptoms when their neck is rotated, that's an indication that the neck is likely involved.
Well, I've actually done a few podcasts on the visuovestibular system with Thrive Neurosport. She's a Katie Mitchell, is a physiotherapist and PhD researcher, PhD candidate I get now in Waterloo, Ontario. And she did a few episodes of the podcast, and so did Lauren Zaks, who's the DPT in Utah. Do you know her?
I do know Lauren.
Yes. And so we did a face concussion podcast together. We still do it when I haven't talked in a while, but we will. I'm very familiar with the visuovestibular system treatment for a concussion, but could you just please explain what you see in it? What's your take on the whole vestibular system and how you'd examine that?
Right. So first, when I look at the visual or vestibular?
The visuovestibular system. So not the system, but the treatment.
The whole thing. Yeah. So When I'm looking at the visual vestibular, the first thing I want to do is make sure the visual piece is working before I even examine the vestibular. If the ocular motor, the visual system's not working, as well as it should, then that's going to affect the vestibular system too, because of the vestibular ocular reflex. So I do my thorough vision exam first, then I go into more of our vestibular visual acuity, dynamic visual acuity, things like that. And so any part of the system that's not working, from eye alignment to eye tracking at different speeds or depths, we want to make sure we're addressing that, and then bringing in the head movement piece to bring in the vestibular system to look at gaze stability as well.
I can definitely see that, because that brain, actually, my brain injury was a severe brain injury, not a concussion, a severe brain injury. You know, three, and I've had double vision since my brain injury, and three eye surgeries. But now, and now I'm doing vision therapy locally here at the Vision Development Center there on August in August. Kara and Sarah were on with August. And so I've done a lot of this vision stuff. It's eye tracking, trying to get my eyes aligned. It's not really aligned, because one is just a distortion, like it's the eyes twisted in the socket, I guess. And I definitely feel the importance of this, of getting your eyes aligned, and having that helps a lot with the vestibular system. So once you have, mine are probably never going to align because of physical limitations with just surgeries and my injury stuff. So, but who knows? And maybe, well, I shouldn't say they never will, but I mean, I don't know. Anyway, and I'm not a doctor. Once you decide that this person's, that the patient, client's eyes are, I'm not saying not the problem, but not going to affect your vestibular, have been treated enough that the vestibular system, how would you treat the vestibular system?
So then I want to get into tolerated head movements while making sure the vision is stable or the vision is clear. So it may mean that we have to slow down the pace of the head moving while looking at an object in a pretty simple room or simple background. So normally we should be able to keep a target still or in focus while moving our head at 2 hertz or 180 beats per minute with a pretty busy background. That's what we should be able to do, but that's often impaired, right?
Yeah.
So I try to find whatever a patient can tolerate and do objectively well. So what can they, how fast can they move their head and keep an image in focus without provoking symptoms to a great degree? If it provokes symptoms in a, you know, up 1 or 2 points on the scale, and comes right back down, that's fine. But if it's really skyrocketing their symptoms and they can't see the target clearly, then I want to make sure I'm slowing down the head movement and maybe using a pretty simple background. And then as we progress, we'll speed up the head movement, add a more complex background, maybe change the base of support. So starting off sitting and then moving to standing, and maybe incorporating balance or movement of the whole body within the room, until we get to the point where they're doing what they need to do for their occupation or their sport.
I see in your empire that you do a lot of this, right, in your bio, that you do a lot of work with the exertion and exercise. So, you're saying like sit and stand, and your other eyes are coping with that, but and their heart is coping with that. But so how would you reduce? Would you reduce, say, your exertion, any exertion or exercise right after when you, in the mid, during that stream, or do you wait till after that's, yeah, the more, a better handle on that? So on their eye, their visual motor system or their visual vestibular system, or would you reduce the heart rate and the exertion at the same time as you're studying you're examining their visual system?
That's a really good question. And as you know, everybody's so different. So what I might do with one patient can be very different from someone else.
That's true.
Typically, I examine each system in isolation. So examine the ocular motor, examine the vestibular, examine exercise or cardiovascular endurance, And then based on results from each system, develop my plan of care. And then within a treatment session, I might start in a similar fashion where we do a few eye exercises and then a few vestibular exercises and then some exertion or cardiovascular exercises. And then, you know, over a couple sessions, start to combine and mix these challenges. So do an eye exercise while balancing, do a vestibular exercise while riding a bicycle. So we start to incorporate multi-system challenges as they are getting better.
And these exercises would not be hardly, would they be exertion, would they be at the upper threshold of this person's ability, or are they just, ready, like just going to the market, getting a bag of potatoes or something like that? Are they like pretty slow, usually a bike ride, or would they be a harder, more training type of bike ride?
Yeah, another great question, and it can vary so much. So I ideally want to establish a threshold when I initially examine them. So is there some sort of exertion threshold based on heart rate or position that they can tolerate? And so that's where I'm going to start. So for some people that might be running on a treadmill, but for most people, it's going to be a lot less than that. It might just be walking down a hall, or like you said, going to the market and picking something up. So it really is dependent. But the key is trying to stay below a threshold where it really exacerbates symptoms.
I want to ask you your protein affiliations, but also first, you also do a lot of high school patients, clients, however you call them, patients or clients?
I usually call them patients.
Patients? Yes. Yep. Well, high school patients end up, but are they usually from sports, or are they just generally, are they specifically from, like, say, local high school football teams or hockey teams?
Yeah, so my patient caseload is probably 95% sport-related injuries. So I'm typically seeing soccer players, basketball, lacrosse, hockey, football. Once in a while, I'll see non-sport-related injuries, maybe car accident, a fight at school, something else like that. But most of what I'm seeing is sport-related.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And I was going to ask you the treatment you give the high school athletes, well, I assume also younger, obviously just kids, whereas pro athletes are adults. So does your way you treat the concussion differ significantly from, like, say, your focus on physio vascular or sarcogenic? Does that feed into as much?
For both groups, for the pediatric or the younger population or the adult professional population, I mean, it's still the same brain. It's still the same systems that we need to examine. The biggest difference is that with the kids, they're still undergoing a lot of neurometabolic changes. They still have a developing brain. So a lot of things that just are impacting their recovery outside of their head injury. You know, they're developing, they're still changing on a day-to-day basis. Their necks are generally weaker than a professional athlete's neck.
Yeah.
Otherwise I'm still examining oculomotor, vestibular, cervicogenic, exercise tolerance. So it's still all the same exams. It's just taking some of those factors into consideration.
And this process that we were both mentioning, or rather the New England Patriots, you're on the medical staff of them. See the Boston Bruins, Boston Red Sox, New England Revolution. What is the home base program? I read that, but I don't know what that is.
The home base program is initially it was started to treat veterans of post 9/11 wars. So to give them some supplemental assessment and clinical treatment across the spectrum of physical and emotional and mental impairments sustained in post 9/11 wars. So it's a 3 to 4 day evaluation with multiple disciplines. And then if they qualify for either the TBI or the post-traumatic stress group, they come back for 2 weeks of intensive training, and that's physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, psychological therapy, social work, nutrition, and everything else in between. And they have what's the equivalent of 3 months of outpatient care in 2 weeks. It's an intensive program. They recently opened this up to all veterans, so not just post 9/11 war veterans, but every veteran. So it's a wonderful program.
I'm not asking more about that, but first I stressed it with more of my planning here to ask you. So professional athletes, a professional athlete comes in and says in training, or not, he didn't say it, his coach says or his trainer says, does that they banged his head on banged his head, like hit the ground with his head, saying, got knocked out and was out for, say, 10 seconds. Would that player and a high school player who also hit his head, went to the ground, was out for 10 seconds, how do they react to your treatment? Do they attack your treatment the same way, you think? Generally, not to shame kids or, struggling with other issues, but like, do they attack with the same picker, say, a professional athlete who's knows that their angle is
a little different.
I mean,
of course, a professional athlete, their livelihood is their job, right? So their need to play might be a little bit greater than a high school athlete. We think of our high school athletes, though, they really identify with themselves as athletes. That's their social group. That's their do every day after school. Those are their friends. That's their social network. That's what they've been working on too. So it can be equally as important for them to get back on their field or their court or on the ice. It may not be their livelihood, but as far as they're concerned, they don't know that this is this their life at the time, because they're that's what they're going through. But of course you have, you know, some high school kids who, you know, maybe this is their way out. Maybe they're sick of playing. Their parents have been paying tens of thousands of dollars for 8 years of lessons and they don't want to quit, but maybe this is their way out. Yeah. So certainly I've seen that as well, where they're like, you know what? I think I'm done.
Yeah.
They still want to get better. They don't want to feel lousy. Yeah. So as far as I'm concerned, we're still working on similar things.
And as you're bringing during the military aspect also in this, just it's often, because obviously that would, I think, would also entail occupational therapy, psychology, other tons of negotiation and tons of other therapists. I don't even know how to mention all them. Definitely different types of therapists that would treat or water veterans, but also mostly the same as in, not the same, but similar to the same number of say therapists would also treat certain athletes and high school athletes as well. Do you often have a combined, they say, a multidisciplinary therapy going with the athletes and military personnel and high school athletes?
Yeah, similar. So we like to be on the lookout for, a high school athlete or a professional athlete or collegiate athlete who may need to see sports psychology or neuropsychology or social work or some other discipline. So we do approach this in a multidisciplinary fashion as well. And so we're, you know, I'm fortunate in Boston and at Mass General Hospital that I have access to some of the greatest therapists and physicians and colleagues out there across many disciplines and many different hospitals in Boston.
Boston is there are tons of hospitals and I mean, especially brain injury related aspects of it. So Mass General, how big a hospital is that? Did your department say?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that. I know that about 20,000 people who work there.
Wow.
So it's you can imagine how many patients we see.
Yeah, and yet there's also the universities there and other hospitals as well, and even in the area. I mean, because now, I'm speaking from St. John's, where we're out in the middle of the North Atlantic, where there's no one near us. We're like us, and we're in Canada, obviously, we're not like desperate, but we're still like there's not much. Whereas in Boston, is close to. I mean, they don't think they're close to New York and Pittsburgh and all Philadelphia, and all these little ways, but you are a lot closer than we are. And that's Hawaii kind of perspective, I guess. But I want to ask you before we end it there about the post-concussion syndrome. You also deal a lot with that, like the exercise at post-concussion and with the other. And the atypical, concussion presentations and considerations for the military. But yeah, mostly the female athlete triad, which is mentioned near bio. So I feel fine asking you about that. What is the female athlete triad?
Oh, sure. So I mean, that's outside of brain injury. That's more female athletes who maybe are under, don't have adequate nutrition and are at risk for any sort of bone stress injury or stress fractures. So that's just kind of orthopedic.
Oh, good one. To define that, is that affected though by, let's say, concussion? Would you say aspects of that are affected by if this person came to see you because they broke a leg, but they also broke a leg after a fall and like they didn't think they have it? Would you just say, okay, well, maybe it's something to do with you when you fell, your head, they're like, maybe hit my head, but my leg is broken, so that's the memories in the mirror. But would you also look at, say, their cervicogenic or their visuocular systems as well? Question, but at that point, it's not kind of rambling here. But
certainly. If they sustained multiple injuries to their leg and neck or head, I'm going to treat one, and assess each one fully. It might take a little bit longer, obviously, but yeah, I would still want to put as much effort into that. If I was suspicious that there may be some sort of head injury involved also.
And going back to the head injury, post-concussion syndrome, and the efficacy of preseason and postseason visual receiver training to return to play decisions. What do you do for that?
So this is mostly with the professional teams I see. So during their preseason physicals that they have with, you know, the team physician, the orthopedist, the cardiologist, I'm one of the people they see as well. So every player on each of the Boston teams gets a full baseline test where I'll get baseline data on their ocular motor, vestibular, and balance. So that if they do sustain a concussion, aside from how they feel symptomatically, I have some preseason data to go on to see if they, you know, are they performing where they did during their preseason test.
So do you feel that the baseline data is as important as some people think it is, or some people think it's not important at all? But what's your opinion on baseline data? Do you need baseline testing that needed?
To me, I think if you have the means to do it, I think it can be very useful. The two major areas that I find it the most useful is identifying those people who might have some baseline impairments that you could improve during the preseason. So if their tracking isn't where it should be, or if their balance or vestibular functioning isn't where it should be outside of having a concussion, so in the preseason, then maybe you can improve it with some prehab or some exercise, vision therapy or vestibular therapy. And then the other way is I found that some people just have abnormal baselines, like they might have an abnormal convergence or an abnormal dynamic visual acuity vestibular metric at their baseline. But if you don't have that and you're going to test it after their concussion and it's coming back as outside of the norm, and you keep working with them and not clearing them to go play because they're not testing within the norm, but you don't know that this is their norm, then you could be delaying return to play timeline. So it can help from that standpoint as well.
And I guess third lastly, whatever. have you ever sustained a concussion that you require treatment for yourself?
So I am a lot older than concussion management has been around for. So I got a concussion in high school, which was in the 90s.
I've read your bio, you're not that old.
Well, I was in the high in the 90s. And so nobody cared about concussions in the 90s. So I did get one, funny and not funny. I played soccer and basketball, but it was during track. I got my concussion during track, which is the ironic part, where I was fooling around after practice and was pretending I could high jump, and I was not a high jumper. And I went over the bar, fell off the mat, which was like a 10-foot high mat, and landed right on my head. But I didn't think anything of it. And I went along and just kept like horsing around.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that I had a concussion until I had handed in an English assignment and it was completely nonsensical. Everything I wrote did not make sense. And I was a good student. So my teacher flagged it and asked me to see her. And I did it a couple of days later and I didn't recognize any of it. So then I was like, oh, but I didn't even call it a concussion. I didn't even know that word back then. And I didn't see any treatment for it because nobody knew that word.
No, exactly. You know, I'm with them with the same type of but actually that kind of leads well into I was going to say it's my last question, but it's more for the longer one for you, but yes, but just the whole experience of just being an odd way to get a concussion, but your whole trajectory of your career started off getting a theater degree. Like how do you go from theater to deciding that you want to be a physiotherapist?
That's a really good question. I ask myself that all the time. So my undergrad was in theater and I was in New York City doing a lot of acting. And then after a few years of that, realized I wanted a career change, something that was a little bit more steady, that was in, I wanted to be doing something that I was helping people. And I come from a long line of teachers and nurses and doctors. And so I realized that's what I wanted to do. So I did the Teach for America program and I was teaching. So my master's degree is actually in education.
Yeah.
Special education. So I was teaching kids with very, a lot of physical and cognitive disabilities. And there was a physical therapist and an occupational therapist in my classroom who would help get the children out of their wheelchairs so that they could participate in different ways in the classroom. And so while I was teaching over those few years, I realized that's what I want to do. I want to be working with bodies and brains. So then I went, I had to do a post-bac pre-med program because I had to take 9 additional undergrad courses before I could apply to my doctoral program in physical therapy. But that's how I, a long way.
Yeah, took a long time because as you just was on to talk about her for the program, the Concussion Corner Academy, she mentioned that you were an actress yourself. So not yourself, Nick, isn't justice, but I mean, you're an actress as well as a physical therapist. So do you still act or do you, give that up?
I mean, if you ask my friends and family, they'd say I'm acting all the time, but I haven't done anything in a couple years. I have kids in middle school. So my extra time when I do have any extra time is spent at soccer games and basketball games and coaching. But it's something that I think once they graduate from high school and I have some time back that I miss it a lot. So I want to get back into some theater. I love it.
Yeah. I really miss it. No. Yeah, that's, I mean, just interesting crossover for sure. But you're physical therapy, and you're obviously you're highly into that, and you're and acting. That's just an odd way to get there. But you know, however you get there, you get there, right?
So exactly, I wouldn't change any of it.
Exactly, yeah. So and you said you started the instructing the course for I guess it's teaching, but Shira says instructing the course for. Dr. Schwartz's Concussion Corner Academy in January, is that, you think?
I believe mine will be at the end of January.
Okay. And then your section of the course is physical therapy examination. And
my first lecture is examination of the oculomotor, vestibular, cervicogenic, and exercise. And my second lecture is the treatment, so the rehab part of it.
Wow. So that's like one week each, right? That's like, so
exactly.
your one course is you'd be like, not just like an hour, be like a week long, just teaching about. So would that be like a very visual thing, or would that be just instructing? Because obviously now these people you're teaching would know exactly what you're talking about, really.
Great thing is we have a lot of videos that we've pre-recorded of every single examination technique with some great graphics to show like the exact parameters and everything. So I'll be instructing it verbally, but people will have access to the visual and all of the videos as well. So they'll really get some nice copies of what they can keep referring back to. For specifics and instructional labs.
And you certainly got some great great other instructors also in the course with you. So should be a very fascinating course. But before we end this now, would you just like to tell people where they can, how they can find you, and where is the best? Your Linktree is where I found a lot of stuff. And that's also where I found a lot of links to the Mass General page, making a lot of info. And yeah, and also Dr. Schwartz's program, which I know. But where, how else do people find you, or if they need to find you or reach you, or on social media?
Yeah, so probably, and you can ask Dr. Schwartz. This is one of my biggest failures is my lack of social media prowess and knowledge.
That's no failure.
No, she's helping me circumnavigate the social media world to try to be more accessible. So Twitter is something that I am on strictly for a professional reason. So that's probably, and it's just my name, Lenore Herget. So that is probably the easiest way for people to reach me. And then the whole Linktree Instagram thing is very new for me. So I'm learning that, but that's another way as well.
And if any Hollywood directors want to reach out to you, where they give me
all of the above.
Okay. thank you so much for being part of this podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Nick. It was great talking with you.
Great talking to you. The music at the beginning of this podcast is by Ben Sound. www.bensound.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.